On this episode of Japan 2.0.
I was on my way to work, and all of a sudden, like, the train started shaking, and I thought, oh, that's weird. But, you know, I didn't think
that much. Trains shake sometimes, right? Yeah.
And trains shake sometimes. But then I felt the wheels of the train scraping against the train track. And that's when I realized, like, oh, this is a big earthquake. Mystical world of game and wonder, arcade sensors like no other, nostalgia, yeah, yeah, every moment, everything is the when I jump all on it, damn, walking through these halls, my childhood is written on these walls, I breathe the air deep down, I know this place is where I belong, my destiny, my wildest dream, my fantasy, my inspiration and my energy, everything up to this point, this place has led me, yeah. Fascination can't go on forever, so real. Like a faded meeting with a friend who knew straight from beginning. 2.0.
Hello and welcome to Japan 2.0. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
But we are back.
You know, we did a pretty good job of, like, recording a lot of episodes, so we had material to release during my time away.
we knew a dark day would come, and we were well stocked.
Yeah, yeah. We did lose a couple of episodes, you know, during the dirty wipe of my computer.
That's right. Yeah, we had some. Yeah. We'll get into it. But the topic of today's show is about stress and how to relieve stress, Japanese style.
There's a phrase that they use here in Japan. It's called high tension.
High tension. Yeah.
And high tension is.
That's actually how they say it. They use the English.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-existent phrase that they might think is a real phrase that they've made up of high tension.
Yeah.
High tension. Yeah.
And high tension is, like, you know, usually you get, like, business guys saying this that are out drinking all night, and they say, what it basically means is they have all this tension built up and they're releasing it. And so you'll hear that people say, high tension, you know, high tension, it's time to release that by drinking and partying all night.
Yeah. You know? So, this is our high tension episode. Yeah, we're just going to talk about, our absence, or I guess to some of you guys, maybe you wouldn't realize we were releasing less episodes, maybe like one a month, where we used to do two a month before.
Yeah.
Maybe you wouldn't realize we weren't actually sitting and recording. We typically do that every month for the first 2 years of our show, but we've had about a 6 month period where we haven't actually been meeting and recording. Last time we met was in December for the onsen episode, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That was the last time we sat down to record.
And that was just kind of a one-off. We typically, you know, record multiple in a session. And yeah, yeah. So
yeah, I can't believe we had as many in the bank as we did. But I'm glad we did, because I didn't want it to become where we weren't releasing episodes that often.
Yeah.
I like it, you know, to be on a regular schedule. And so this is our chance to tell you that we're going to go back to our regular schedule. So you have a lot of Japan 2.0 to look forward to. It's kind of like our second, we're going into our third year of recording podcasts, and the response has been really great from everybody.
Yeah,
and
the ironic really thing about us not working as hard on the podcast was, like, our listener base, like, tripled, you know, in the time of our absence. So I told Matt, my joke is, like, we just got to make him want more, you know, and wait. Yeah. and the listeners will go up. The truth is that we've kind of, as you probably realize, we're not the best at technology. We do okay, but we didn't know how to, like, properly, like, tag our show. So, like, when you would search it on iTunes, unless you search Japan 2.0, if you typed in, like, let's say Japanese culture or Japanese fashion or Japanese games or onsen, it wouldn't come up.
Yeah, now when you type in Japanese podcast, you only have to look, like, three pages down
before all the other more popular, better ones.
Yeah, yeah. But thanks for sticking with us during the dark period, and we're happy to be back and relieving some of our stress.
Yeah, we thought this topic of stress and stress relief would be a good transition, kind of from the last episode we just released, which was recorded a year ago. Where we talked about kind of like a more critical side of Japan and trying to kind of balance out our usually optimistic viewpoint. And then, we have gone through some stressful times too lately. So we'll kind of talk about that and maybe we'll get the ball rolling there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So why have you been stressed lately? Like, why were you gone? I mean, we've kind of said it, but just to kind of full force, like, big reason we had to stop doing the show regularly is because you were stressed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wanted to start working at an international school. So recently I had to get my teacher's license and all my certification lined up. And then I also did a master's program on top of that. So I've been doing a lot of school.
So you had your first year of teaching, and you're getting a master's and teacher cert at the same time.
Yeah, so when I signed up for school, it was online courses, and I was offered a job at the school I wanted to teach at eventually. Yeah. So it was kind of too good to pass up, so I had to take the job and do school on top of that. So it was a lot of long
hours. You're supposed to have like a year off. Your plan was like, just go back to school, have a year off from work.
Budget our money.
Be a house husband. And that didn't happen.
It didn't. No. So I actually was, I feel like I was working Japanese businessman hours. Yeah. You know, like salaryman hours.
If you listen to our episode, How We Cheat at Japan was the title of that one. We kind of say one reason that we're so lucky is we get a lot of the benefits to Japan. But the worst part of Japan for us is the work hours that normal Japanese people have to work. And, you know, we work at these international companies where we don't have to do that. But, yeah, you're getting hit with the, like, 14-hour days.
Yeah, yeah. So that was really tough. And I really didn't have a lot of extra time. And we didn't have a lot of time to hang out. And so when we did, you know, we didn't always have time to record podcasts.
We're trying to make it work. I'm a teacher, too. And the second year of teaching for me is always harder, you know. You start off optimistic and you're really good at grading and stuff early on, and then it just starts to pile up for me. And yeah, the second half of the year, I'm always a more, I don't know, pessimistic person than I am the first half of the teaching year.
Usually the second year, you already have like some of your curriculum together.
The longer you teach. I'm saying the second half of a year. The first semester for me is usually, like I said, I can stay ahead of the game and stay organized, and I start to fall behind.
Well, I think even though we don't work as many hours, even as a teacher, like, your jobs can get stressful, and, you know, and we work at international schools, so it's a very different culture at an international school than it is in just Japanese culture. Yeah. And I think any job anywhere around the world, you're going to experience, you know, work stress at some point. Mm. But yeah, the end of the year at a school is always, you know, it's always pretty stressful.
Things are falling apart.
Yeah, yeah.
The duct tape is slowly coming undone. The holes of school together. Yeah, yeah. So I guess, you know, jobs. Matt was doing school. So we're stressed. Do you find that you had any kind of, like, how would you try to relieve stress when you were super stressed during that time?
During that time, I mean, the things that usually work best for me is I enjoy cooking. So I was learning some recipes, you know, and I'm trying to do a little more Japanese cooking as well.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, do you find living in Japan it's harder to cook like the food you would make back in the States, or
you know, in some cases, yes. I'm half Mexican, so I like to do a lot of Mexican cooking. It's kind of, you know, in the family. You know, we have a lot of our home recipes and stuff. And so sometimes that's difficult because I can't get some ingredients. Like, I can't find jalapenos other than pickled jalapenos, right?
And it can be expensive to get those ingredients even if you can find them, right?
Right, right. So there are places like Caldi. We've talked about Caldi. There's Yamaya. It depends on how – I've heard different ways to pronounce it. And then there's another place called Jupiter. That's another chain that – they all sell international foods. But it can get pricey, and some places will have like tortillas for 1,000 yen, which is like $10,
really small US dollars, right?
And they're always smaller than the ones you'd get back home. And then you could go to another place and they'll have it for 500 yen, which is like $5. So it takes a little getting used to, you know, what you can afford, you know, to make.
That's awesome.
But I use a lot of Japanese ingredients in my cooking all the time, you know, like the rice we use. We don't usually use a jasmine rice and stuff that's harder to find. You know, I just use Japanese cow rose kind of style rice.
Yeah, that's funny. Cooking for you is a stress relief. For me, having to make a meal, now I have a son, I can't just eat at the convenience store all the time, you know, or go out to eat. It's definitely causes me a lot of stress every day too. Have to figure out what I'm going to make. And I was telling you before, I think something unique about Japan is like the rice culture, and every meal kind of has rice here.
Yeah.
And it takes a really long time to make the rice. It's like an hour, 45 minutes to an hour for the rice machine to cook, you know, enough rice for like a family. And to me, it's very premeditated. A lot of times, I just want to just be like, yeah, I'm going to eat, and I want it to be done in like 10 or 15 minutes, you know? You can tell I don't like cooking, or I'm not a big cooker, because I'll typically make like a lot of instant food. Or last night we made poke, so like just got raw tuna and avocado and threw it together, and that takes like 10 minutes. It's really easy. And we're like, oh, cool, we can do this right before bedtime and go to bed a decent hour. And like, oh, we need rice. It's going to be an hour sitting around waiting for this rice to be made, you know? And you can buy instant rice. There's like these little packets at Family Mart, you know, and you heat them up in the microwave for 2 minutes. But kind of defeats the purpose of having a home-cooked meal for me when I'm microwaving rice, you know?
Yeah, with all the preservatives and stuff they probably have in there.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, I mean, maybe it's just as healthy, but...
I doubt it. It just, yeah. For me, the plastics in a microwave is never a great combination.
Yeah, it's not good. Although in Japan, everything with plastic goes in the microwave, and styrofoam in the microwave, too, yeah, which that, I never that, used to do back home.
It doesn't melt here. Another, on the small nuances, is what we do best. Have you ever seen back home where you boil plastic in the... Like here, let's say you buy like a little pouch of soup. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's a little pouch of like soups or curries, and they give you two methods to cook them. One is throw them in the microwave, you know, the normal way. And the other method is heat up a pot of boiling water, throw the plastic package inside there, let it boil for 8 minutes. It doesn't melt or anything. It just like boils it in there. I typically will do that one because I try not to use a microwave. You know,
yeah.
I read all the negative, you know, reports on microwaves and stuff. But it's bizarre. I've never seen any other country, you know, where they throw bags in the boiling water.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of is like military rations.
Yeah, that's,
you know?
that's a good analogy.
But yeah, those are great. Actually, when I lived in the San Gabriel Valley, for everybody from the San Gabriel Valley, California, represent.
You know what I'm talking about.
But there used to be a place called Spike's Teriyaki Bowl. And there's a couple of places where you could get teriyaki bowls.
Spike?
Yeah.
Is that a Cowboy Bebop reference?
I don't know if it was a Cowboy Bebop reference. I guess it could have been. But anyways, this place did a really good teriyaki chicken with, you know, pickled cabbage and stuff. Mm. If I go to 7-Eleven, I could buy instant rice. I could buy teriyaki chicken. And I could buy the cabbage. I could buy pickled cabbage. It tastes just like the Spikes. One I used to get in California. So
that's why I don't like cooking.
Yeah, but it's awesome. It's one of those where you boil the chicken, you know?
Yeah.
And it's great. It's one of the best meals. Like we get it once a week usually.
Oh, man. Yeah. So another thing that caused all of us in the Kansai region stress recently was we had a pretty big earthquake. I think it was, you know, one of the biggest Osaka's had in a really long time.
Yeah. The epicenter was here in Osaka.
Northern Osaka.
Yeah.
And it was like a 6 on the Japanese scale, which only goes up to 7. I think it was a 6.1.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not much higher is possible. I will say for me in Kobe, it didn't... Once I saw how high that number was, I was like, oh, really? It was that high? It didn't feel horrible, you know?
Yeah.
I would have guessed, out of a 7, I would have guessed it was like a 4 or something, you know?
Yeah, it didn't seem to hit our area that badly.
Yeah,
I mean, even though I was right by the epicenter, like when I looked it up, it was pretty close to Umeda and like the area that we were in. It was a little further north. But I was in the subway and all of a sudden we got to a station, the doors opened, went out.
It was in the morning, like 8:30, like on the morning commute.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were going to work.
I was on my way to work and all of a sudden like the train started shaking and I thought, oh, that's weird. But you know, I didn't think
train
that much.
Shakes sometimes, right? Yeah.
And train shakes sometimes. But then I felt the wheels of the train scraping against the train track. And that's when I realized, like, this is a big earthquake. And, and then the alarms started going off on our phones, and everybody starts looking around.
The alarms went off after you felt it?
Yeah. I felt the shaking first before the alarms started going off. Okay. Maybe it's because we were under the ground.
You're pretty close. You're near Umeda, which is only, like, on train, like, 15 minutes away from the center.
Yeah.
For me, it was my son's first day of summer school, like a new school. We're all excited, and we woke up early and handmade his lunch, you know, transitioned to how much, you know how much I like cooking. And so I got up early, did the lunch for an hour before, and we're honestly, like, I was looking out the window because I can see the school from my window, pointing at my son, saying, like, there's a school, we're going to go there. And I'm paranoid about earthquakes. If you ever listened to me before, I think I talked about my least favorite thing about living in Japan, and the one thing I hate here is the possibility of earthquakes. And I'm always ready for them. And I knew right away what it was. And I just yelled, earthquake, and started running back. Then the alarms on the phone went off. And then it got, like, really strong. There was, like, a little small one.
Yeah.
So the alarm for us out in Kobe actually worked pretty well. We were all under the table before the strong part hit. But it was still only, like, a 5-second strong vibration. It was very up and down motion. I've had one before that was, like, half the size of this one. It was more of a left or right. I felt like you're on a boat.
Like
a
rolling,
boat.
Yeah.
The rolling or a boat, yeah. Rocking or being hung over. All of the above. This one was like going over a rumble strip. Like
It was shaking. Yeah. It was really it was a really strong earthquake. And I think
it was a good experience though to see. For me, in a lot of ways it scared me.
Mm-hmm.
And made me think, man, I was always scared, but I should be more scared in some ways. But in other ways it's like, okay, that's a 6. Wasn't that bad. I would imagine a lot worse.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, once you live through them, I've from California, so I've been through a couple of big quakes. And once you live through them, you realize, like, as long as you're careful and choose a place that's, like, you know, pretty recent and retrofitted for earthquakes, you're pretty safe. I mean,
so that's
it's always the areas that are out in the country and stuff where, like, all the earthquake levels, everything. And even in Japan, that's historically true too. Like, Tokyo's had some big quakes and hasn't had, not as big as, I don't think as big as this lately, but everything was like, some people had a lot of trouble with this earthquake. Like, there were some people living in shelters and because they were out of electricity and water, and they were worried about gas leaks and stuff like that. And some people lost their homes, but for the most part, I mean, for a big quake like that, the Osaka really held up.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of variables. I'll kind of get into that. The thing I want to hit on was just the kind of disconnect between my experience. And granted, I lived, you know, an hour from where it really hit. So there are definitely people I know. It's probably really scary and horrible. But kind of the disconnect of what I experienced. And then I thought, like, okay, it wasn't, like, that big of a deal. And then, like, the news stories for days after, like, how bad it was. And things that start adding up. They find people, you know, that the death count is rising every day. There's things that start falling apart a day later. And I was like, oh, this is, like, kind of a bad earthquake. And people from the States are contacting me. And people are marking themselves safe on Facebook. And I was like, okay, like, this is, like, a legit, like, big deal thing. That if I was living in the U.S., I would have been like, oh, that's scary. Japan's earthquakes, you know. But actually living through it and seeing one kind of in some way made me feel better about it all.
Mm. Well, that's good.
Yeah. But what I was afraid of was a second one coming. All the agencies kept saying, like, all right, in Kumamoto this happened. And then, like, the next day a bigger one came and killed a lot of people, you know?
Yeah.
So I did feel, I was on vacation. I wanted to go out and do things. But I was like, I don't want to get out away from my family. And then the train stop and we're, you know, apart for 2 days or 3 days. So actually, I had a trip planned with my friend Chris. We're going to take this really cool romantic train called the Twilight Express. Romantic's maybe not the right word to use there. I don't know. You know, like the cool vision of like an old-style train with like a dining car on it.
It's so,
like,
you're a romantic talking view of romantic in the literal sense.
Yeah. I'm a literature teacher here. Yeah. Not romantic between me and my friend Chris, of course. this diner car. We were supposed to take it out to Nara. And we just thought, it was the next day after the earthquake. And we're like, it's running, but if we don't want to get stuck out in our away from our families and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, bringing it back to stress, I think the thing that I think the thing that affects me is not immediate. You know, like when I came out and the train stopped and they evacuated us from the train station, it was pretty crazy. Like, you know, people were really calm and just, you know, going outside and they're gathering and all the trains were down and, like, there's just, like, people on the corners, just hundreds of people on the corners.
Probably on their phone.
Yeah, on their phone. Like, writing people and, you know, writing their families or writing their bosses saying they're not going to show up to work on time. And I was pretty close to my work, so I was just going to walk the rest of the way.
Yeah.
I mean, it was maybe 15 minutes more than my usual. I was one stop away, so... But, yeah, it didn't hit me at first, but like the next couple of days, like I felt.
What I'm describing. Yeah.
I was doing like, you know, schoolwork and all that stuff. I had all those stresses, you know, and I was finishing up my master's program. So those stresses compiled with like, when's the next earthquake coming? Because, you always had that feeling, especially right after an earthquake, like, okay, that could have just been like a you know, calm the one shake, the storm, but then the aftershock could be like 3 minutes long, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when things really get damaged or people get really hurt. So, you know, that's where that stress started coming in, you know, like I didn't feel it at first. Like that first day I was just kind of like in a bit of a daze, like you're just kind of like, that's a weird day, you know? But then the days following is when I felt more of that anxiety surrounding like natural disasters.
The best way I would describe it is like when you wake up from like one of those nightmares and you can't get out of your mind all day, and there's something's like off about your day because that dream you had is just kind of like looming over you, you know? You ever have one of those?
Yeah.
That's kind of how it feels for the next couple of days. Like there's just something looming over you. I don't want to speak about bad weather too long, but we like a week later or maybe like 5 days later had like the craziest rainstorm that Kobe is in that area's ever had.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Kansai, sure it came out here too, like, right? Kansai was like hit hard.
So it rained for like 5 days straight, which where I come from doesn't sound like a big deal, you know, like it rains for 5 days straight a lot.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel much harder or anything from what I would get back home. But I guess because like there's just a lot of mountains here, and you were saying before, like the countryside, just some of like the engineering and the city design isn't that great there. I was just getting the emergency warnings. And Kobe were going off like crazy. Were you getting the emergency warnings?
We didn't get the emergency warnings.
I got like 20 of them.
It we didn't get nonstop. Them this time, but we're by a huge river, so it needs to really flood, you know, before we get that. But we've had that happen. You know, the last, not this typhoon, but the last typhoon that came through, they evacuated people to the third floor of buildings. They said everybody needs to go to the third floor of buildings. There's a potential flooding. And all you're night on the third long. Floor, right? Yeah, we're on the third floor. But, you know, I went outside to see if, like...
How bad it was.
Well, I wanted to see if elderly people... I wanted to see if it was starting to flood.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if, like, my neighbors needed, like, a third floor to go to. Yeah. So I went out to see, but nobody was outside.
What if the neighbor was the tire popper? I was going back and listening to our recent episode. Yeah. Shout out to the tire popper. And tire you invited them over and you didn't know it was them.
Yeah. We've narrowed down, you know.
who the tire popper is. Yeah. But, so was it bad though? Like were the streets flooding or anything?
But no, it didn't end up flooding, but all night long the flood sirens from outside, we're near a school, they were going all night long.
So I had those for like a week straight. Yeah. And it's weird, right?
Yeah.
But so, I can see, like, when I go to my Suma station, which is just a couple of minutes down the street from me, we look up in the mountains, and you can just see trees are gone. It's just giant streaks of mud. Yeah. Like mudslides.
The mudslides are terrible.
So I've always said my least favorite part of Japan is, like, the weird weather and stuff.
The natural disasters.
It's real. the fear is alive. And how to alleviate that? I don't know. I guess, living through it, like I said, has made me feel like it's not as bad as the stories sound.
Yeah.
It's easy to say from afar, but it's so rare. I think it affects, you know, 1% of the people in the country, you know, that it's like a needle in the haystack. The fact that you're going to be that person.
But I mean, there was some destruction, quite a bit of destruction from the floods and stuff. I mean,
I almost feel more calm about it all now because I've kind of realized that the chance that the small area that's hit from an earthquake or whatever is going to be where you live in the country.
Yeah.
Is relatively small.
We both live on hills and stuff too. So we're a little bit like, we're slightly less likely to have flooding, you know, come all the way up to our buildings.
Sure. I don't worry as much about flooding as the earthquakes.
But with earthquakes, you never know. But, once again, Japan's prepared for this, you know, and if this earthquake didn't, you know, at least instill a little confidence in the engineering, because nothing was damaged in my home.
Yeah, I do think it has a lot to do with, like, the kind of earthquake that it is and how deep it hits. Like, you can have a really strong earthquake, but if it hits, you know, more shallow versus more deep or in certain locations... I think it was a combination of, engineering being better than, like, the Kobe earthquake in 95.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess, I haven't really read much about this, I would guess that wherever this one hit, however deep it was or whatever, it was strong, but it was in a place, obviously, where it didn't do as much damage. I think it's a combination of those two things.
Yeah. I mean, people are worried about tsunamis, you know, of course, because the tectonic plates, if they shift, you know, the water might rise. Sure. And, you know, after 311, you know, there's always that concern.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll do our special segment and we'll come back.
All right. See ya.
We're back. Yeah, Japan 2.0 hack for you.
Yeah, this is a good one. Yeah, I'm excited for this.
Matt and I hung out a bit, you know, before recording this podcast today, and we were at Starbucks, and I just did something so naturally, and as I looked around, I'm like, hey, this is a podcast moment, you know? It's the only in Japan thing, but to me, it's so normal now.
Yeah, we had another segment lined up, but we had to, like, we thought this one would be in the very moment. Appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's about a special way that wouldn't work in any other country about how people reserve their seats at cafes usually, but it would work anywhere.
Yeah. Restaurants. You see this sometimes. Yeah.
And it involves leaving unusual or very like sacred sometimes objects to hold your seat for you, including wallets. I've seen people just throw down their wallet, you know, probably has money and credit cards. They just throw it down on the seat there and leave it unattended.
Purses. Bags.
My favorite one is just like a sweat towel or hand towel or handkerchief. Yeah. You say handkerchief there. If I was back home, I'd think, oh, someone lost their handkerchief. Let me just push this aside. Or maybe if I'm feeling nice, I'll get it back, you know? I would never think someone's going to come back for that here. But here you see a handkerchief on a table, you know you cannot sit at that table. That table is taken.
I wonder when this started because, like, for the most part, it doesn't seem like a very Japanese thing, you know? With people queuing in lines and stuff.
Can be rude, right?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, I think it's kind of obnoxious or a little bit rude, you know, when somebody puts something down and then they're not around for a really long time. Mm. There's been times where I've gone to a restaurant and I really wanted a seat, or, you know, I was with three or four friends and we can't sit together because somebody has something reserved and they're nowhere to be seen. Like, I'm looking around like, are they buying something? Where are these people? You know?
The other day I was out with my wife and she had our bag, like the baby bag full of diapers and stuff like that. We was in a really tight space where we were sitting, so there's no room for the bag. So she just kind of had it out in like an open area near another table. And I noticed for like 20 minutes, it was the only table no one was taking. And I had to get up and move the bag. So I was like, oh, you know what? Just that bag being next to the table, not actually even on the table, just next to it, people are not coming and sitting there because I think that bag is reserving that table. But yeah, I just think like it just shows you how safe Japan is, number one. That you could leave like Louis Vuitton, like $1,000 purses, you know, or bags and stuff. The wallet one is the craziest one, you know.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Like, I mean, I would never, I still can't do it.
But I don't do the wallet. I wouldn't leave my phone. People leave their phone, their iPhone, you know.
I don't leave my phone. I don't leave my PC. I don't leave my wallet, but I'll leave anything else, you know, like bags, jackets, you know, books and things like that. Like, nobody touches that stuff. Like, ever. And I'm sure if I left my wallet or
other people do it. Yeah, the Apple computers, like, I just laugh. You know, we're in massive cities, you know, 10 million people, 5 million people. If you're anywhere in the States and left those things, the police would laugh at you. They'd be like, yeah, someone stole my wallet. Oh, where was it? Well, I left it at a table unattended for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They would be like, okay, next person, please.
In some ways, it's, you know, a way to, you know, release. I mean, you could release your stress of, like, worrying about those things. You know, like, I could leave my bag here. I didn't even think
about the stress.
Yeah, I mean, tying it back to, like, our main conversation. I think you can. Because, yeah, you don't have as much stress to, like, worry about your personal belongings and stuff. That's not to say things don't get stolen. They do. But
when I used to try to tell like family and friends who knew nothing about, I mean, most people listening to this, hopefully they have an interest in Asia or Japan, but my family doesn't. And I would try to tell them, like, look, guys, it's so safe out here. I could just fall asleep in the street in downtown, you know, Osaka with my wallet out on my chest with like money, thousands of dollars, like spread out, you know, in there, and no one would touch it. No one would do anything. No one would bother me. Yeah, so I mean, the cafe thing.
It would never, I mean, you don't have to worry at all, you know? You could sleep out in public and, like, nobody would mess with you. Yeah. They might help you to like, make you more comfortable or something. But,
yeah.
But, I mean, anytime, like, I've left a restaurant and I've forgotten something, they come running out, you know? Like, sure. People come running out to look for us.
Today, even a guy didn't give me my receipt. I don't want the receipt. I'm just going to throw it away. Yeah. But he ran out of the record store, Tower Records. They're like, oh, here's your receipt. Okay. But why is this a hack? It's a hack because it is kind of stressful sometimes finding seats at a cafe here.
Yeah.
Cafes, I mean, I've wanted to open a cafe for a long time, but not because it's lucrative, just because it seems fun. But I do think in Japan is a good place to own a cafe because it just seems like there can never be enough. It's so hard to get a seat at a cafe. I think there's a studying culture at cafes in the West that doesn't really work out here so well because
it's just hard to find places.
You can't find enough space to spread out a couple books or notebooks, and the Wi-Fi availability is not that great. So there does always seem to be this kind of like big fight to get a seat, and to be honest, there's a certain part of me that's too cool. Like, I don't want to like go running for a seat and not get it.
Yeah,
and I don't know how I feel like an idiot. I'm kind of that way on like Subway too. You know,
mm-hmm.
People run in and go get their seats, and I kind of slowly stroll. And if I get a seat, yeah, it's cool. I didn't need that seat, but there's one open. I'll take it. You know, I don't want to like go for a seat and then not get it, and I'm stuck like an idiot. Everyone saw me want the seat, and now I can't have it.
Yeah,
it's kind of that way with a cafe too, and So, yeah, it is good. Like, oh, I got this seat over here, but now I got to go order. Yeah, you just throw your stuff down, and you're good to go, and you're winning in Rome. That's a little bit weird. It turns off Matt, but it's the nature of the beast.
I mean, it's not to say I don't do it from time to time. It is what you do in Japan. So, I mean, if you do come to Japan and you go into a Starbucks,
you get the couch seat. You're lucky enough to get that couch seat. Oh, man, you get the
couch seat. Oh,
you're definitely throwing down the bag to save that thing.
No way. You're lucky. But, you'll notice that people are often reserving seats for their friends or often...
random objects.
Yeah, or just taking up a seat with their bags of, you know... goods.
Yeah, so if you live here and you see something down, especially the handkerchief, you can't sit there.
Yeah, don't do it.
You're
don't
breaking it. Social taboo. That's taken. Seat taken. All right, we'll come back with a couple more stressful events and releases. I want the
Hey, how about that?
Yeah. So we have one more kind of stressful thing to talk about, and then we're going to have this, some kind of like rapid fire ways that people in Japan might relieve stress. For me, one thing that kind of stresses me out about Japan, and this is probably just my own insecurities or something, but the country I live in, I'm really affected by my environment, I think, more than other people I know.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm around people who are, you know, really laid back, it kind of makes me feel more laid back. If I'm around people who are more uptight, I'll kind of adapt to that, you know?
Yeah.
There's pros and cons to that. But one of the cons, I think, living in the country is sometimes I can adapt to maybe more negative sides as well as the positive sides. And Japan, you know, has this stereotype of being a little bit uptight and stiff and really following rules and being polite and all that. And I find that those are all things that actually attracted me to Japan because I was kind of naturally that kind of person. But I lived in Korea, which is a place that doesn't have a lot of that. And I really actually liked letting go of some of those things. In Korea, I found myself being more boisterous when I was out or just not caring as much about my surroundings, which was kind of nice to like, oh, maybe a ruder person or something. But it was, again, I'm making grand generalizations here, but in Korea, that's kind of the norm. You know, you can speak loudly when you're out in public or if you want to run to get somewhere, you know, that's normal. Or if you just talk to random people, you know, that's cool. But in Japan, a lot of those things, you don't have a lot of random conversation going on, or you're kind of quiet when you're out, you know, you're not going to talk on your cell phone on the train. And I find that stuff kind of really rubbing off on me. And sometimes I feel like I'm not as fun as I used to be. And maybe I'm going to blame Japan, where I should really blame myself. But I do think a lot of it does have to do with where I live, and that I'm really uptight with following the rules and not breaking certain social norms. And I wish I could just say, well, I'm not Japanese, so I'm not going to do that stuff more. But yeah. For some reason, I seem to be too concerned with me fitting into Japan sometimes. And that's good in a lot of ways, but sometimes it stresses me out.
Yeah, I mean, you get brought up a really good example off mic. We were talking about this how in South Korea, you could yell "Yogyo." It's means like over here or like
I need to order.
Yeah, I need to order, and you could shout it very easily. And then here in Japan, like you get a little nervous when you say "Sumimasen," which is basically the same thing. But
part of it is, I think the way I say the word "Sumimasen," "Sumimasen." Isn't 100% correct.
It's a hard one. It's and a tough word.
Yogyo is really easy. Yogyo is easy. You know, as one of the. And the funny thing is, actually, Japanese is easier to pronounce than Korean, I find.
Most times.
But sumimasen is a word where there's a certain nuance in the way it's said. It's like a very nasally sumimasen.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I just don't really like the sound of that word. So it's hard to yell it out loud enough.
Oh, when I yell it out, like they rarely hear it.
I get
like,
a, they barely I would say ever I have, hear I have it. About a 40% chance success rate. Which is so, again, going back to me not running to get a seat and make a fool of myself.
Because we don't do it. You know, like that.
No, here's the saddest thing of all is I've done it so many times. And the person next to me can obviously hear it. And they know what I'm trying to do. And they'll see me do it like twice and fail. And then they'll do it for me and be the hero. Another like man. And I was like, yeah, thanks, dude. I can order my own food. But yeah, part of it honestly is like just to speak loud and yell like that is so rare in Japan. That is allowed. That's totally normal. That is how you have to order a lot of times. But it is like a rare exception to the rule here. And I guess I can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, you do become a part of like where you live. I think it's impossible to not be influenced in some way or, you know, take on some of the traits of the place that you're in. Yeah. But I think I'm similar to you. I think that we were both kind of attracted to Japan because the way they do things kind of spoke to us, you know. Mm. Maybe we were a little more comfortable following, you know, the social cues and the norm, you know, of Japanese life. But I do find myself, especially like looking back on situations that I'm in, thinking, wow, that was a really American way to act, you know, in this situation.
Well, that's my point is that I came here not being that way.
Yeah.
And now I've corrected them. And I think I'm a more polite, well-mannered person for it. But I think it takes a toll on like, I don't know, my inner psyche or something. Where
your expression.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah.
There are certain ones where I still play the guiding card. I don't think I'll ever change. One is eating in public or eating and walking down the street.
Yeah. I break that rule all the time,
I'm just too. I mean, everyone's busy, but to take the time to just
sit down
and eat is very American.
Mosquitoes all over you, you know.
I think that one's specifically very North American, maybe Canada too. But I think like Europeans at my work have made fun of me for it. But at work, I would be walking down the hall and I'm eating a donut and going off to my next class and I'm like, yeah, this is bad. Like, this is pretty barbaric, you know?
Yeah.
But I was like, this is one I just can't change. Like, I just don't have time to sit and stop and eat.
Well, today I had a Starbucks Frappuccino, and I was on the train, and drinking and eating on the train is usually pretty frowned upon.
Yeah, you see other people do it, but they are typically not the highest pedestal in society. You know, it's a bit lowbrow. You see people
when you go
it,
to Hanazonocho and Nishinari, you see it a lot more on the trains.
Yeah. So but, like, don't think you'll never see these things, but the people that are doing them are frowned upon in Japan.
Yeah, but I think like there's some exceptions. I think if you know, like the Starbucks was in a cup with a straw and
top on it.
Yeah, and I was careful. I try not to make a lot of noise. You know, that slurping sound at
the
end.
Those cups make that sound.
Yeah. Yeah. But it ended up being I don't like to do that very often, but I'll do it sometimes. I would get a Famie Chickie all the time, like on my way home from work.
But those
and, like,
are so greasy and juicy. I do it too, but I'm always just like,
I always get the grease all over my shirt, you know. For those of you who haven't listened to previous episodes, Famie Chickie is the best. It's sold at every convenience store. Family Mart has Famie Chickie, but you could buy the chicken.
It's like Kleenex. You say Famie Chickie.
But it's delicious. You should definitely get some.
So stress relief, In terms of that one, I don't know. That's like a long-term one. I can't. So in general, like how do people in Japan relieve stress? Yeah, it's not that different. For me, one of the most different ones is the onsen culture. We did a whole episode on that.
Oh, so yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to talk about it too much here. But yeah, for me, that's the one thing where I always walk. If I've got a lot of stress really built up and I found myself getting short with people, I'm like, all right, I need to go to the onsen this weekend, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it really does work, at least for a couple of days. I do feel pretty good after a day or two.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the spa treatment. But yeah. Also, you know, another way people relieve stress is if you go into major major train stations, there's oftentimes massage parlors.
Those are more common here than most places, huh?
Yeah, and there are a couple of them, especially in Umeda, where the massages are, like, right by the window, so you can see people getting, like, sports massages.
Which doesn't seem that relaxing
to
me.
It cracks me up.
It's like working out in a window, right? Yeah. I don't want people to see me sweating. Like, I don't want people to see me.
There's one in particular that I walk by all the time, and the people in there look so happy. The people giving the massages always wear
sporty outfits,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, huge smiles, and the people getting the massage are like screaming in agony because they're just like, you know, it's a sports massage, so it's not real gentle.
I wonder if that's stress relief for the person giving the massage to like bring pain upon another person.
Oh, well, I don't know. I guess pseudo-masochist, you know, but whatever it is.
They do have a lot of these like 10, 20 minute massages, which are actually, every time I'm out with my wife, like we do like our dates or our kids in school still, like, let's just get a massage. It's like $20 for 20 minutes. Like, seems pretty low, like barrier of entry, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm not really into massages or anything. I kind of just want to try it out, but I'm going to show shies away from the idea. There's two styles that I see are really prominent. One is the sports one you're talking about, where they're wearing like always like the like Under Armour stuff and like neon colors and very happy. And the other one is always definitely more like they always advertise women. It's not like full on sexual looking, but it's always like a little weird. Like the lighting is very soft on the girls, and I don't know. It kind of weirds me out a bit.
There's definitely places there are, you know, massage parlors that are a little more scandalous.
But I'm going in that direction. Like there is that whole industry here, but these are definitely not that. But just the way, something about the imagery of it. It's a little bit too much in the wrong direction.
Yeah, you're right. There's the sports massages, and then there's like the new age massages where they like have candles and rose petals and stuff like that.
Feature girls. They never see guy like in the marketing. They never show guys, and that's always a little bit weird to me. But yeah. And just the way the look's a little bit strange. So. Anyway, though, there's that.
Yeah, it's a classic one.
Of course, every country, people drink. But I think when it comes to, like, work here, it's pretty famous that in Japan, after work, there's a big drinking culture. And it's not like Friday night after work, after a hard work week, which I think is more equivalent in the West. It'll be, like, a Tuesday night, Wednesday night. You go out any night of the week and you just see all these business guys going out drinking, and it's famously reported as like required. It's like a work requirement.
Yeah
Your boss sometimes makes you go.
Well, I mean, sometimes people are pressured to go after work, but sometimes people just want to you know, release some steam after work, you know, or talk some smack about their coworkers, you know. So you'll find a lot of like izakayas. I mean, izakayas are famous as being like
8 o'clock on a Tuesday night or something. They're jam packed.
Yeah, jam packed. People are drinking lots of beer, lots of like mixed drinks, and eating yakitori and okonomiyaki, and you know a lot of like street food. You know, like quick, easy.
I want to do a whole episode on nightlife because we did that for our Korean show before. You know.
Yeah,
we haven't done it, so I don't want to get too into it. But like the nightlife culture here is pretty unique, letting off steam. For me, I live by a beach, so the beach has been really great for relaxing. Even when it's not beach season, even like the winter, as long as it's not too cold, just a walk on the beach, you know, is pretty nice.
Yeah, that's a great way.
And, you know, in Michigan, we have the Great Lakes, but it's not like ocean, you know. So Japan, you're always somewhat close to the ocean. You know, it's not that big of a country, and you're surrounded. It's an island country. So you can always kind of get to the ocean. For me, that's a really good way to relax. It's pretty unique to Japan.
I think sports are a big deal for a lot of people out here.
Baseball,
I mean,
especially.
Yeah. David and I are not sports people, so,
But
it is like one of those things that, you know, you see, it's a major part of people's lives. I think a couple episodes ago when we were talking about Tokyo versus Osaka, we mentioned we met this guy that had like Hanshin Tigers, everything in his van, and he was excited to share with us.
I guess I thought about playing when you first brought this up, but yeah, going to watch the games, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think more people experience that, but there are baseball, like, people do a lot of sports to relieve stress. Some stress. In our neighborhood, there's a guy that every so often we walk by, and he's just swinging a tennis racket. He doesn't even have a ball. He's just practicing his, like, tennis racket swing, you know, like, in the parking lot. And he's out there all the time. And then there's people that do golfing, like the indoor golfing, or go to golfing ranges, or people that go to the batting cages and hit a couple of baseballs. Their batting cages are everywhere still.
Yeah, we're kind of getting into, like, hobbies. And I think the thing about Japan that's kind of unique with the hobbies is, and this Korea was this way too, but it's different from Western culture, is that people choose that usually their one thing, if it's baseball, like you're saying, or
Gundam models,
game centers, Gunpla. They do their one thing for stress release as their hobby, and they really do it hard, and they are like a pro at that one thing. And they're maybe not the most well-rounded in their hobbies, which for me, I kind of have that problem, as I'm decent at a lot of things, but I'm not great.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Right? Master of none, that's exactly. I'm not really good at anything, you know, because I just dabble in things until I give up. But yeah, here they, you know, they choose their one hobby, you know, they just go hard at that all the time. Maybe two, you know, but they're very focused in whatever they're doing for their stress relief. Yeah, game centers is one I was thinking of too.
Yeah.
I think that's a big reason why they're so popular here. Arcades, because people will go there after work, you know, and just play for a couple hours. And you do see there are a lot of times businessmen, they're smoking, which is probably a big stress relief that Matt and I can't speak to. You know, people love smoking here. So yeah, they'll smoke at the game centers, you know, and just play for hours on the same machine.
Yeah, the UFO catchers are popular with, like, young people, and especially, like, the rhythm games. I would say that's another one that, for young people, like college students or high school students, you'll often see, like, our mall that's not too far from here. They used to have one of the taiko drums games, like, in the front, and they used to draw a crowd, and people were cheering for them and singing the songs and clapping with them.
That's definitely a part of Japan I thought would be, like, really prevalent.
You'd see all the time.
Kinda, it is a little bit rare, but it's great when you see it. Yeah.
But it does happen. And I mean, those are all ways that people, you know, release their stress out there. I mean, video games are a big deal for us. I feel like video games are a great stress reliever for me.
So I'm sure there's more out there, you know. These are kind of just the main ones that jump to our mind. There, we try to focus on things that are a little more unique than Japan.
Religion is another one. Like, I mean, the Buddhist temples. Temples.
We'll finish on this one, but this is a great one because the cities here are so balanced. A city, as much as I claim to be a city guy and I love cities, I do find myself when I'm in the city center, you know, I can take like 4 or 5 hours and I'm like, okay, I need... Let's go find some nature, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of other cities I've been to before, that would require, like, getting into a car and going out. You know, I'm going to drive 15 minutes to a park or something. Where here, you'll be, like, downtown. And even if it's a smaller shrine or temple, the way that they build them is you can't really hear the city when you're in there. And there's often, they're not that crowded. And you really will feel like you're kind of alone in nature, you know? You can hear some insects and stuff, and you smell the incense. And it is, I would say, about once a week, you know, I'm out in the city, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop in this temple. And I'm not a religious or spiritual person really at all, but it's just kind of for, like, the chill out, reset moment. The stress of first world problems of just shopping too much or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Just stopping in one of these little temples. I love the way they're on every corner.
I'll kind of finish with this this little anecdote. While I was doing my master's program, there were a couple of times where I was in some pretty dark places where, you know, like I was coming home from work after stressful days, having to turn in projects and you know, do a bunch of writing and reading and stuff, and just not thinking that I'd ever get through it. And there were a couple of times where I just rode out to the Sumiyoshi Taisha, which is like a huge... If you come to Osaka, you have to see it. It's got a huge orange bridge. It's a famous tourist spot, you know, everybody comes out on the weekends, there's weddings, and
I think it's a good balance of being tourist spot, but it's not touristy.
It's not touristy. Yeah. And I remember just one day feeling terrible, just like had a really rough, like, stressful day. Nothing was going right, you know, I couldn't do laundry or anything, you know, it was just like a horrible day. And I must have looked like a total disaster. You know, I was wearing dirty clothes. I had like a beanie on and my beard was growing, like getting a little crazy. And I rode my bike down there. Just, I had other things to do. I had tons of work to do, but I was just couldn't do it anymore. Mm. And I rode down to the temple and I walked around for maybe 20 minutes in the quiet. I actually bumped into somebody in there like, are you all right? You know, are you doing okay? Because I must have looked like a total wreck. But to be honest, just walking around and taking in like the sights and just being between all these big trees, you know, they kind of, that temple's kind of famous for having like really old trees and stuff, and huge trees. So a lot of tree cover, and it just really changed my day, you know, like it made a huge difference. And when I came back, I still wasn't in a great mood, but I was able to do a lot more work than I ever would have been able to get done had I just had a breakdown, you know, a total breakdown. And it's important to have that, you know. In our previous podcast about Korea, I used to talk about taking a couple of weekends, like our weekends, we used to go hiking. And because in Korea, there's not as many, I think, stress relievers. There's the same ones, partying, drinking, you know, like going out, you know. There are sports. There are a lot of the similar ones that they have. But some of those stress relievers that I have, like music and stuff, they weren't as good with. So I used to find myself going hiking and feeling a lot better. And I feel temples fulfill that same spot. You know, I go to a temple, I walk around, I go to the vending machine, I get a iced coffee or a tea or something. And I could just look at the turtles in the pond for, you know, a half hour, and then I'm good. I get that recharged, you know?
Yeah, I think if you appreciate like design and stuff too, there's like a whole nother level, because those places are always just so well done and just beautifully taken care of, you know. And just looking at the fish and the turtles even and all that stuff,
it's super cool. A bit of nature, there's a bit of wildlife, you know. There's like cats, you know, the temple cats, as we call them.
There's something really zen, obviously. I mean, they're famous, it sounds obvious, but I think when I go to temples now, I kind of think about it like I totally use them when I'm not having a great day to kind of go there to recharge. But when I go and see other people, I never really consider that. Like, I wonder if everyone here is like having a hard day and that's why they're here, is like to refresh, you know? I'll kind of look at it with a different perspective, I think, when I go there, you know?
I mean, I think a lot of people turn to religion and stuff for that reason. And and you know, like you said, we don't particularly subscribe to Shintoism or Buddhism, you know, but there is something to it, you know. There is something that like the human soul or human heart desires, or you know, that you can only get from a place of peace. And when you go to those places, I truly feel at peace. You know,
I feel it in a different way there than I would at a church. I'm not Christian either, and there's something about when you go to a church, there's a cool feeling. But to me, the feeling of shrines or temples is a different kind of cool feeling. For me, it's more peaceful.
Yeah, well, it's definitely outdoors.
I guess like that connect with nature more than inside. Yeah. But anyway, that's a cool way to end. And time to get to song of the show.
Yeah, so today our song of the show is going to be I Wonder Why by Rip Slime. Or it's just called Why, but you'll hear in the chorus,
you'll know why. Rip Slime, let's talk about them a bit. They're definitely one of the big ones. Back when we were growing up, at least, you know, late 90s or so, searching Japanese music, or definitely Japanese hip-hop or rap, they're going to be, like, top one or two. I'd say Dragon Ash for me in the late 90s.
Yeah, Dragon Ash, Rip Slime. I mean, they and SDP, you know. But Rip Slime has, like, a bit of a mainstream, like, appeal. Like, I don't fully understand how Rip Slime is in the position that they're in. Because some of their music is a little bit underground, like underground style. But then some of it is like almost like mainstream pop, hip hop, right?
Yeah.
And
they're hit or miss for sure is how I describe them.
Yeah. I would say that anytime you pick something up, like you'll get something that's good, but then you might get something that's like so-so or not something that great.
They're definitely good. but I think there's a reason we're talking about them 2.5 years into the show. And they weren't one of the first.
I think we had them in a previous episode. Maybe, I'm sure we must have. Yeah. And a Doki Doki Radio, I think I played one of
the name was always like funny to me as a high schooler. Rip Slime. Like,
yeah.
What is that?
Well, actually, it has to do with slimes from Dragon Quest. Seriously? Actually, yeah, they got their name because the selling the slime characters was really popular at the time, and so that's where that part came from. So, Dragon Quest is a video game that's really important to the Japanese in the Japanese zeitgeist. You know, that's like everybody knows about Dragon Quest and grew up with Dragon Quest. So it's Natsukashi, nostalgic for people. So yeah, so that's kind of where their name came from.
What about the Rip?
Rip, I don't know. Yeah. They have gas.
I thought rest in peace. Maybe.
Sometimes you got to release stress. However you can do it. You know.
There we go. So the song's called Why.
Yeah, why? Cool. So, yeah, enjoy that. And, yeah, please subscribe to us. If this is your first time listening, welcome. And if you would like to follow us more and see what we're up to, you know, you could follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're at Japan 2.0, spell out point. Yeah. And,
appreciate all the comments and reviews. It definitely, stress, it keeps us going in stressful times. I know Matt will have, like, hopefully not anymore, but I have these times where like I just had to let him get work done, but sometimes I'd get such a cool comment I'd bother him still and be like, hey man, look at this, this is so good. Like,
no, it made a huge difference. And actually coming back to get to do this and doing the podcast again, I mean, it's a huge stress relief. And I don't know, it's part of the reason why, you know, we live in Japan is so that we could share this stuff with people. So I hope you enjoy you know, hearing how we release stress and how we enjoy living here. Please rate us on iTunes or Google Play. That makes a huge difference for us. You know, we've had a couple of good ones recently. We'll have to go through
Jordan those. Gave us the iTunes review.
That
was a great one.
Thanks, Jordan. You know, it's good to hear from you again. And we look forward to hearing from everybody in the future. So please reach out, you know, it means a lot to us. And with that, we're gonna say
until next time, back to 2 times a month.
Yeah, get back excited. 2 times a month. Yeah.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you. Bye.
Kimi ni dakishimerarete mite hajimete kizukatta. 知らない真相を見つけなきゃ
I want the world. 呆れるほどのコネクション I want the world. 忘ればかりの愛想